Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassami Satu Garu Dhamma Garu, one with respect for the Buddha and Dhamma, Sanghe Chati Bhagaravo, and strong respect for the Sangha, Samadhi Garu Atapi, one who is ardent with respect for concentration, Sikhayati Bhagaravo, and strong respect for the training. Appamada Garu Bhikkhu, one who sees danger and respects being heedful. Patisantara Garavo, and shows respect in welcoming guests. Abhambo Parihanaya, a person like this cannot decline. Nibbana Seva Santike, stands right in the presence of Nibbana. So, good evening and welcome everyone to another Clear Mountain Monastery Wednesday evening conversation and Dhamma evening. As usual, we'll give some reflections for about half an hour and then open things up to other people's thoughts, other people's questions. You can put those in either in the YouTube chat or on Facebook. And after that, at around 6:45, we'll go over to Zoom and have a chance for more interaction there. So the theme thought it would be good to talk about this evening is that of hospitality. So that was the seventh aspect of Dhamma in that verses of the verses on respect, which I just chanted. This is from the Dhammayut chanting book, translated by Tanisiro Bhikkhu. And I've had a mixed relationship with this chant. Wat Metta, it's a Dhammayut monastery. They use this chanting book, and I loved the chanting book. Wat Metta was the first monastery that I lived at, and I really fell in love with so many different verses and chants in this book, especially the four Dhamma summaries, which I've talked about before. But when it came to this verse, I have to admit that I was a bit skeptical. I love the first six or so respects, verses on respect, showing respect for the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, respect for samadhi, respect for the training, respect for heedfulness. But this, quote, respect in welcoming guests, or patisantara garavo. I have to say, I had not read any of these mid or early 19th century tracts from European Buddhist scholars who will often talk about monkish glosses or monkish explanations in the texts. But that is what I intuited this last type of respect was. I thought it was something which later generations of monks threw into the sutta, threw into the Buddha's words, just some way to get more stuff for themselves, to live a more luxurious life. I was of the view when I first came to monasteries that the Buddhist path is all about meditation, and that's what we should be doing all the time. Anything, there's so much praise for seclusion. It's one of the Gotami Dhammas that the Buddha's stepmother, that he gave to his stepmother about those teachings which lead to seclusion, not to entanglement. That is the Dhamma, that's the Vinaya, that's the teacher's instruction. I was so kind of locked onto this idea that Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, real Buddhism, is all about seclusion. And any talk about hospitality or relating to other people's was a bit of kind of accreted fluff, basically. But over the years, living at monasteries and really seeing the beauty of hospitality, my song has definitely changed. My idea about the role of hospitality has changed a lot. And I now love this chant. I love the verse. These seven qualities of respect come up a number of times in three or four different suttas. And we'll go into them and just take this theme of hospitality and flesh it out, both in its metaphorical sense, different senses, say, being hospitable to sights, being hospitable to sounds, being hospitable to feelings, being hospitable to the breath, and being hospitable to the mind. These are all kind of metaphorical expressions of hospitality. But the Buddha really did also talk about the just day-to-day use of this term hospitality. Patisantara is the Pali word. And yeah, just the quotidian, everyday, just being a good host. It's something he talked about. So we'll mostly lean into that and how that can support the growth of the Buddha's teachings and the growth of the sasana. The Buddha said that these seven types of respect, respect for the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, respect for the training, respect for samadhi, respect for heedfulness, and respect for hospitality lead to non-decline of his teachings, non-decline of the religion, the sasana. And yeah, it's really true. And the more you stay around monasteries or meditation centers that appreciate the truth of this, the more you see the beauty of it. And yeah, it's a real thing. It's not just in there so that monks can get, you know, a bit more food. So I thought to start off this talk on Buddhist hospitality with a reading from Rumi. So many people will know this poem. It's perhaps his best known poem, The Guest House. One of my teachers, a very conservative and traditional Theravada monk, once joked that Rumi, the 13th century Sufi mystic and poet, was the American poet laureate, in that lots of American Buddhist Dhamma teachers love quoting Rumi, perhaps more than they love quoting from the Pali Canon. But this poem is so good that it deserves inclusion here. So, and just to preface, this is before going into hospitality of body and speech, letting people into our house, letting people into our homes, letting people into our spaces. This is what Rumi is talking about here, is hospitality of mind, being a good host to that which comes up in our lives as being human. So this being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing. Invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So that's great as poetry, and it's perhaps the most beautiful elaboration of the third foundation of mindfulness that I know. So the third foundation of mindfulness is knowing mind as mind, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. And how this is described is that one knows a mind that has lust as a mind with lust, a mind with hatred as a mind with hatred, a mind without hatred as a mind without hatred, a mind without lust as a mind without lust. A liberated mind is liberated mind. An unliberated mind is an unliberated mind. So it really is this host that can take in whatever mind state, whatever clouds come into the sky of the mind, whatever storms or whatever sun and beauty comes into the sky of the mind, and can just accept them and see them and take them in. And as Rumi says, you can meet them at the door with a smile. So see if you can do that. This is a good way to listen to Dhamma talks as well. Say you don't always know the person who's going to give a Dhamma talk. You come to a monastery and it might be a new monk who you've never heard before, or the monk who you're used to, they might be giving a talk that you don't like. There's some kind of trigger subject. Maybe you hate hospitality, or maybe the person giving the talk is saying something that you dislike or disagree with or whatnot. But still, you can just take in the sounds, take in the, this impingement or the beauty of it, and just let it in. See if you can host this. Hopefully someone giving a Dhamma talk is not saying anything that's hurtful or harmful, and you can entertain it for a while. So with that, we'll jump straight into discourse. This is the Sakkhacca Sutta, Anguttara Nikaya 7.70. And it's about respect, the role of respect, and habit formation. And the Buddha talks about these seven reverences, specifically saying that, questioning, what should a mendicant, a practitioner, honor and respect and rely on to give up the unskillful and to develop the skillful? That is, to cultivate the kusala and to give up the akusala, to cultivate that which is beautiful and to give up those mind states which are unbeautiful. And the Buddha gives seven answers. A mendicant, a practitioner, should honor and respect and rely on the teacher. The word is Sattara. He doesn't use the word Buddha here, but just talks about the teacher. So you can think about that as being the Buddha, which it most certainly is, or whatever teacher comes along, your own teacher, your living teacher, or whoever you're able to take as a teacher. This is a common metaphor in later literature as looking at different mind states as our teachers, or looking at different people as our teachers. Even if it's an enemy or someone who's doing something we dislike, we can look at that person as a teacher because they're teaching us about our own aversion and ill will and judgment. So different interpretations. To give up the unskillful and develop the skillful. The Buddha continues with the next five. A mendicant, a practitioner, should honor and respect and rely on the Dhamma, on the Sangha, on the training, that is the Sikha. So the five precepts are Sikkhapada, or Pada states or points of Sikha, of training. This is how the Buddha talked about virtue. This is how the Buddha talked about the mind. These are aspects of training. Sikha, an educational system. This is the basis for the Thai word for education. Siksa. Siksa is from Sikha. It's an education. One respects and gives honor and respect to a moral, a ethical, an ontological training. So one should honor and respect, rely on concentration or samadhi. One should honor and respect and rely on diligence or appamatta. And finally, the Buddha says that a mendicant should honor and respect and rely on hospitality, patisantara, to give up the unskillful and to develop the skillful. So a really somewhat of a novel concept. What is it that the Buddha is suggesting that we can give up? What's the unskillful, the akusala, that the Buddha is suggesting that we can give up through being hospitable and through being good hosts? This is a question which we can all explore for ourselves. But one physical gesture I've talked about before, about how this gesture of just holding on to something and then letting it go. This gesture goes through the whole of the practice. It's a gestural metaphor for the whole of the practice, from giving. You've got the piece of candy or whatever in your hand and you just, I want it for myself, but give it up. And mind states, I love my anger, I love my views, I love whatever it is, but just, can I just relax? And it feels better than to constantly be clenching to be able to give up. So that's how this gesture of generosity and giving is a symbol for the path, but also this is a symbol for the path, this gesture of hospitality, of come on in, it's okay. It's a gesture for the path. So, but how does it lead to giving up the unskillful? Well, if you're taking on a practice of letting someone into your house, you're to some degree letting go of your own preferences. You're at least being put face to face with your preferences. And this is an integral part of the path. It's a part of each of the satipatthanas, or the foundations of mindfulness, the frames of reference. The Buddha says one pays attention to the body in and of itself, or feelings in and of themselves, to the mind, as I mentioned, in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. That is, putting aside one's likes and dislikes in relationship to those things which are, we perceive and are biased towards thinking are pleasant and unpleasant. So someone comes into our house, we invite a guest into our house, and we don't like what they do. They don't take their shoes off if we're used to taking our shoes off, or they do take their shoes off if we're not used to having people take their shoes off in our house. They sit on the part of the couch that we're not used to people sitting on the couch. They don't use a coaster. They leave their trash around. They don't put recycling in the right recycling bin, or they try to recycle things which should be put in the trash, or they put non-compostable things in the compost, all the many petty things which we can get annoyed about over time. But we can just take a metta, single T and double T, a distanced view. We can come to this frame of reference, which doesn't just follow along with what we like, but can take a bigger view. And that's at the heart of hospitality. I'll introduce here a quote from Ajahn Jayasaro in Stillness Flowing, page 286. But here the Buddha, Ajahn Jayasaro is specifically talking about the monastic training of looking after one's teacher. But here I frame it in terms of hospitality in general. So hospitality is a unique kind of Dhamma practice. Essentially, a practitioner takes the teacher's daily needs as their object of mindfulness. It is a practice that calls for devotion, patience, endurance, alertness, sensitivity, and intelligence. So reframing that totally in terms of hospitality. Hospitality is a unique kind of Dhamma practice. Essentially, the host takes the visitor's daily needs as their object of mindfulness. The host takes the guest's needs as their evening's object of mindfulness. And this calls for devotion, giving some level of reverence to the person who's come into our house, that we've invited into our house. Patience, overlooking our minor preferences for how things are placed around our house, like that, I think it was Misery, the Stephen King book, when I forget her name, but the hostess there, she was a great, I didn't think I would talk about this, but in Misery, so you've got this author who gets in a car wreck in the snow and is kind of abducted and looked after. He breaks his leg and is kind of looked after, brought into this woman's house who is a super fan of his writings. And she is a great hostess. She looks after him. She like puts him in bed and looks after his broken leg, and she does everything right. But she's got, there are stipulations to her hospitality. Basically, she wants him to write the best. She wants him to write the book that she wants him to write. And he gets up and leaves the house, and he knocks over a little statue and puts it back the wrong way, and she's totally pissed. So goes from being a great hostess to a horrible hostess. She ends up breaking his legs with a sledgehammer. so don't be that kind of host. So it requires patience, endurance, being able to endure when people don't leave the rooms back the way that we had them. This is, by the way, a camping mantra, is to leave no trace, or to, it's a monastic mantra in a sense, to leave a place, a location, a place that you stay better or more clean than when you came into it. So this is alertness, paying attention to how was the room arranged. This is on the part of the guest, paying attention to how things are laid out. And on the part of the host, paying attention to what does the person need? What do they want? I have to give a shout out. I believe they're possibly listening right now, but to Yom Ladawan and Hiran, two amazing hosts and hostesses who have been hosting monastics for the last, I think Ajahn Chah came and stayed at their home in Bothell in 1977 or 79. And they've been hosting monastics ever since. They've hosted Lumpur Sumedho many times, Lumpur Suchito many times, Ajahn Pasano many times, Ajahn Nyanako many times, Ajahn Nisibo and I many times. And just this past weekend, they hosted us again. And yeah, talk about alertness. And this is something you can learn. Hospitality, to be able to learn hospitality, you first have to value hospitality. So that's what this respect for hospitality is about. This patisantara garava. Garava is giving weight to. Garu is literally that which is weighty, giving weight to patisantara. Patisantara, the root there is ta, which means to spread. So this is like the English expression, you lay the whole spread out for them, or you spread out, you unroll the red carpet for your guests. A similar notion with the Pali patisantara, or hospitality. And you can learn this from others. The Buddha said that when you find that you're have a deficit in your capacity to give, then you go and learn giving, generosity from someone who's good at it. If you are not so good at having integrity and keeping precepts, then you go and learn from someone who has been keeping precepts and has a deeper, more foundational, more gravitas to them. And similar with hospitality, you can learn hospitality, go and watch. And don't, yeah, this is one skill in being a guest and a host, is you don't want to stare. You don't want to, be, you know, weird. But go and learn from different Thai people, from different older generations. My grandparents were amazing hosts and hostesses. You don't have to be Buddhist to be a great host. This patisantara, is a virtue in many cultures. The Greek word xenia is, it's a virtue that was talked about in the Odyssey, in the Iliad. It was perhaps the virtue in both of those books. The word hospitium is a Latinate word that, similar concept. Many traditional cultures have this as their a foundational virtue. Many crests in ancient England, like the family crest, the coat of arms, would have the symbol of a boar's head, maybe on a plate. And this is a symbol for abundance, giving, laying at that spread of the best food, the best gifts, giving. And for any vegans that you don't like the boar's head, I don't like the boar's head either, tofurkey. You can have a tofurkey on your coat of arms. Or a symbol of a three-legged stool. This is another one that you would find on medieval coat of arms as a symbol for hospitality. So learn these things. And Yom Ladawan, Yom Hiran are basically so alert. You know, they would offer breakfast to the monastics that were there, Ajahn Nisibo, Ajahn Gai, Ajahn Lumpur Pasano, and myself stayed there. Each had our own room in their house. Every morning they would offer breakfast and they would be watching. Are they, you know, finished drinking their coffee? Do they need more coffee? Do they need more milk? And this is, this is how you train in hospitality, train in sensitivity and become intelligent. You know, you, I know monastics and lay people who go to monasteries who actually have spreadsheets on different monastics and what different monastics' preferences are in terms of food and lodgings, whatever. This monk likes the cold and likes to have their windows open. This monk likes the heat, so we'll turn the heat on. This monk likes coffee. This monk likes fruity pebbles. This monk likes donuts, etc. So yeah, being intelligent and noticing what people like. And how does this go to increase wholesome dhammas? Well, one, it endears you to the people who you host. And that's important. The Buddha said that just from seeing a teacher, someone who's wise, that's beneficial. Why is it beneficial? Because then you might go listen to the person. Why is that beneficial? Because then you might heed what the person says and you might approach the person. You might serve the person. Why is serving the person good? Because then you can draw close to the person. So there's this whole causal formula, this whole causality of drawing close to other people and being a good friend, which is, yeah, just a minor form of hospitality. So I hope I've made a good case for hospitality. I labeled the whole talk Buddhist hospitality, but really, yeah, you don't have to be Buddhist to be hospitable, and it will put you in good stead no matter who you're hospitable to. It does bring up one question. In this quote from Rumi, it talks about inviting in and the dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful whoever comes. There is a place in Buddhist practice for, being judicious about your guests, who you let into your house. When you're practicing the third foundation of mindfulness, knowing mind is mind, this is a very open way of presence, a way of practice where you are doing as Rumi suggests in the guest house. Anger comes in, you watch it come and you watch it go. Greed comes in, you watch it arise and you watch it go. The space of the mind can hold that. But there are other times when the Buddha says that if a thought of ill will arises, you should crush, obliterate, destroy, and annihilate it. Yeah, so the Buddhist path, there's nuance there. There are different skillful means for different times. So if someone, and again, this works on the physical level as well. If someone is a bad guest and it's only temporary, you can overlook it. You can take it on as a patience practice. But if someone's being harmful or if they're being rude or if they're being inappropriate, similar to a mind state of intense craving, you can ask that person to leave. You can even call the police if that's necessary. You can take out the big guns. The Buddha said in the analogy for that way of practice where you crush, obliterate, destroy, and annihilate unskillful thoughts, his analogy was just as a big man, a strong man, would take a smaller man, lift them up, and move them somewhere else, so too you can crush, obliterate, destroy, and annihilate unskillful thoughts. But you don't want to call in the bouncer first thing. You know, you can have them at the door, but that might turn away some people. That might turn away some guests. So knowing when to call in the bouncer and when to just be a good host. I thought I might get to hospitality of sights, i.e., yeah, treating any sight that comes up as just a guest. Anything that comes up, I see, it can just come in. I can be space for the world and allowing my mind, my heart, even the eye organ to open up and be soft. Being hospitable to sounds. As Ajahn Chah said, you know, in response to someone who said, what do I do, Lumpur, when sounds are coming to disturb me? Lumpur turning it around saying, the sounds aren't disturbing you, you're disturbing the sounds. So being hospitable, sounds come and sounds go. If you practice with the nada sound or the sound of silence, that you can turn to it anytime. And just how can you be a good home for this sound of silence, for any sound, not make a problem out of things and rejoice in that which is beautiful and helpful on the path. Hospitality to feelings, not hating and tensing up around any dukkha and not grasping after and indulging, overindulging in sukha. Hospitality to the breath. How can you be with the lungs, breathe in a certain way that it's almost like the breath wants to stay there and the breath is happy to leave. So being hospitable to mental phenomenon, that's really what the whole of the practice is, because mind precedes everything. Everything is mind-made. So having a hospitable mind, being space for the world, rather than coming from space, come from space and be space for the world, be hospitable for the universe. So I hope I've made a good case for both metaphorical hospitality of mind and for hospitality. There's so much. There's a whole literature in the Vinaya Pitaka, the monk's rules. There's a whole book on the protocols for looking after senior monks and for looking after incoming monastics. I might put a link to some of those translations in specifically from Ajahn Tanisaro's Buddhist Monastic Code in the show link, but for now we'll turn it over to questions. Okay, a very timely reminder of observing the diverse mind states. Not me, not mine, not myself. Yeah, totally true. They're all guests. They're all birds in the sky, clouds in the sky. This whole committee that comes in. The Buddha gives another example of it's like a room with six windows. That's the window of the eye, window of the ear, window of the nose, window of the tongue, window of the body, window of the mind. And things come in, feelings come in, and they go out. And you can just watch them. Ajahn Chah gave the simile of, it's as if someone is sitting in a room. And this metaphor is that which knows, the knowing capacity, is sitting in a room. And there's just one chair in the room, and the knowing is in that chair. And other people come. These are the guests, mind state, sight, sound, smells, moods, whatever, they come up. And yeah, you're the knower, that which knows is sitting in the seat. And yeah, the sight or mood comes in and, you know, it's just sitting on the floor. Eventually it's not too comfortable and it leaves. So just operating from this seat of awareness is what Ajahn Chah was pointing at there. Before I go too many other questions, I should also give a shout out to Devin and Willery, our hospitality stewards here at Clear Mountain Monastery. We have a really beautiful practice of, Devin and Willery, who I believe might also be Donna Devas. Apologies if I'm getting that incorrect. But if there's someone who's visiting, who's a Clear Mountaineer, and you're visiting Seattle, it's possible to get in touch with them and to be paired up with someone who's looking to host people. And we've gotten a number of different people who've been doing this, especially this past weekend. We had at least, I don't know how many people, at least three different people who hosted three or more different groups of singular people or groups of people. And it's so beautiful that that's a part and an offering of the Clear Mountain community. On a different note, I have to say, in terms of not practicing, well, judicious use of hospitality. Right before this sit, I was in our daily meditation and there was a fly. Anybody who was in the sit may have seen me opening my eyes, kind of looking around. And there's a fly, a quite loud fly. It's a very small room that we're in here. So I have to admit, I was getting a little bit annoyed not being so hospitable to the fly. But fortunately, I was able to get this Bugzooka, a very humane way of catching flies or ants or any kind of insect. Rather than smashing them or using fly swatter, you can just use this button and this little sucks them up into this little container, and then you can empty them out outside. So I, as the judicious bouncer, I wasn't sure. I thought it might disturb other people if there was a fly zooming around the microphone. Endured the sound of the fly and eventually got rid of it. So when I spontaneously stop by my Israeli friend's house, she immediately starts cooking for me. Beautiful hospitality. Love it. Thank you so much, Deborah. And when we go into Zoom, people, please feel free to share other similar stories of hospitality. Ajahn Nisibo talks about how there's a Christian monastic tradition of, if this is might have just been one person, but he was a woodworker. And if anyone came into his woodworking workshop, if he didn't have you know, a cup of tea in that person's hand within a minute, or I don't know, remember what the measure was, then he had failed. So cool stories of hospitality. So thank you. A comment. I learned too much about taking the teacher's needs as the object of mindfulness by watching you care for Lumpur Pasano and offering your back to support him as he moved to the chair. Isn't that beautiful? Yeah, I didn't invent that. I learned that from watching other monks at Abhayagiri. I think it may have been Tan Obasi, perhaps, who created that. But yeah, you see beautiful things in a monastery. When you stay around people who have been training in the art of hospitality and look, observing, being observant of other people, you see just these nuances and trainings in how to look after people and how to be a good host. So yeah, thank you for highlighting that, Mary. Really beautiful. Yeah, there's a lot of stories about hospitality in these different monasteries. Pretty much, I'll go a little bit into some of the protocols, and people can still feel free to put questions in the chat or other stories about hospitality from your own life. But yeah, we've got specific protocols that are put into the voice of the Buddha, and I could believe that he did say these things. Actually, let's see. Yeah, I'll share this, actually. This is from the Buddhist monastic code. And this is, yeah, what the Buddha is saying that a monk should do when they're receiving other monks. A resident monk, on seeing an incoming monk who is his senior, should arrange a seat. And then the commentaries go into even more detail. So this is, the commentary has its thing to say here. And then the older text, what's in brackets there is the commentary. But then the older text continues. He should put out washing water for the feet, a footstand, a pebble foot wiper. Going up to greet him, he should receive his bowl and robes, should ask if he needs water to drink, should ask if he needs water to wash. If the incoming bhikkhu finishes the first beaker of water, the commentary says, ask him if he would like some more. And then the older text, if one is able and willing, one should wipe the incoming bhikkhu's sandals. When wiping their sandals, he should wipe them first with a dry rag and then with a damp rag. Having washed the sandal wiping rag, having wrung it out, he should put it away. The commentary then continues, the resident bhikkhu should fan the incoming bhikkhu first at the back of the feet, then at the middle of the body, then at the head. If the incoming bhikkhu says, enough, fan him more gently. If he says enough a second time, fan him still more gently. If he says enough a third time, stop fanning him. Isn't this awesome? And it just goes on like that. So this is kind of bare bones Buddha giving advice for how to be hospitable. And this really happens in monasteries. When you come to a monastery, we get trained in this. This Buddhist monastic code is the primary thing that we study every year at forest monasteries. It's the only formal study that we have at monasteries, at forest monasteries, most forest monasteries I've lived in. So yeah, we're training these, we're doing these, we have visiting monks come and we set up their huts for them. There's a place in the commentary which says you, on the first day when a monk comes in, a visiting monk comes in, you set out three toothwoods, which are kind of like old-fashioned toothpick / toothbrush. So you put them, you put three different sizes for them, and then you watch what they take the next day. And then you kind of make adjustments as per what they take. So that's an aspect of Buddhist hospitality nuance. Another question. Are there any protocols of hospitality at the time of death or near death? That's a great question. The Buddha says something which he says he himself, there's a sick monk who's about to die in his monastery, or at least very sick. And the Buddha himself, he looks around and sees that no one else is looking after this monk. No one else is showing hospitality towards the sick monk. So the Buddha himself, with Ananda, goes, and the monk has serious diarrhea. The Buddha cleans him up, washes him off, and looks after him himself, along with Ananda. And the Buddha says, if you would look after me, if you would upatak, is that Pali word, if you'd upatak me, then you should upatak a sick monk. If you upatak or look after someone who's sick, that's as if you were looking after me. Jesus says something very similar as well. There's a very big practice of looking after sick monks. In fact, there's a whole protocol for looking after sick monks and predicting what they might need. And around time of death, just being attentive. But what's interesting about this hospitality is that we read all of the nuances, and it's a very monastic situation that we read those nuances there about. But the mind of hospitality, the mind that wants to help, that is looking out in a very sensitive and intelligent way for ways to help, that completely transfers. In my eighth year in robes, my grandfather became terminally ill and was told, I was living in Thailand at the time. I flew back to America, was able to be there for the last 2 months of his life. And I have to say that all of the lessons that I had learned of upatakking, looking after, attending to, showing hospitality for senior monks, completely transferred over to being attentive to and wanting to help and wanting to make the senior monk comfortable. It's almost as if, the three characteristics of existence, this anicca, dukkha, anatta, it's almost as if you're looking to see, as you're paying attention to this meditation object, i.e. the person who's dying, how can I make them experience as much sukha as possible, experience as little dukkha as possible? How can I make their experience as stable as possible, testing anicca, testing dukkha? And how can I do this as consistently as possible, testing anatta as well? So, for some respect, one who shows respect in welcoming guests cannot decline, stands in the very presence of Nibbana. That's right. That's from the Dhamma chanting book, which I referenced at the beginning of the talk. I'll share that again. Yeah, there it is. So, yeah, thank you for mentioning that. It also seems the dying person would benefit from being hospitable towards death. Yeah, Mary, thank you. It's interesting. Who is the guest and who is the recipient of all the hospitality, and taking these, this training of body and speech into the training of the mind, seeing how you can do that. That's really what practice is all about, is being hospitable to and intelligent with mind states, knowing how, just holding them just the right amount. I think that simile that the Buddha gave with regards to samadhi of a baby bird, it's like when you're holding a baby bird, if you want to transport, you want to say it's come into your room and you've been able to catch it, it's lost all its energy, you pick it up off the ground. If you squeeze too tight, if you kind of over hospitalize or you're overly hospitable, you're just constantly, it's called upastalking. Upatak is the proper Pali word, but you're upastalking somebody, i.e. like, you know, peeking in and always overwatching them. That's holding the bird too tightly. And if you're just too loose, the bird's going to drop out of your hands and get hurt. So that's like when you're receiving somebody at your house and they're in your living room and you just go off and eat a hamburger in the other room. So thank you everyone for a really wonderful discussion. I'm going to paste the link to the Zoom room in the chat. And anyone who is so disposed can join over there. I'm expecting it'll be a really good conversation because I'm hoping to hear other people's stories of hospitality, how they've done it themselves and how they've seen other people do it. So, and we can talk about anything else as well. So with all that, I'll wish everyone here a good evening and a good week. All right. Take care and see you next time.